As you probably know, in different colors, the colors related to your service temperature, but it tells me everything about the stars. The stars is classified and it gives you different colors, which is actually the service temperature, different names. Your biggest stars are maybe blue stars, and they are called the old blue. As the star gets smaller, it gets cooler and the lighter the B and A. And the F starts to get a little bit yellow. Then you go into the yellow G stars, which are sunlit. The K is getting cooler yet, and the N red stars go on and on all the way down to stars that are too much larger than what the planets are. Now, these groups are also broken up into 10 parts, so you'll have an O0, O1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And your O9 is going to be very close to a VO. This will be important later when I talk about the different stars, because life, intelligent life, starts around F8. Well, it could be mentally on down, except for some things that happen down later here. Life itself could start around F2 to F5. I'll get into reading later, more interested in why it has to be. This grouping that I have down here is my own grouping. My group 1 stars stand for single stars that are in the right spectrum range to have life. These are the very, very dense stars to have life. My group 2 stars are cooler stars that possibly could have life, but not as likely because the stars are getting cooler in the light zone. There's a certain zone around the star that has the right temperature range. So on your group 1, this is wide enough so that your orbit is a little bit elliptical. It'll still keep having enough heat at one end and turn off the two hot at the other. But when you get down to your 2B, your light zone becomes very, very, very narrow. As you get down here, it's practically non-existent. So here's the planet that happens to be in exactly the right spot and very few planets will be. So most of these will probably not have life. The 2A group could be colonized by the group 1. These stars would be a planet. They have a very wide light zone, but they don't last long enough to light for intelligent life to form on their own. This is the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. Hertzsprung and Russell developed it independently in different countries at the same time. It's probably the most important diagram in astronomy. They plotted the temperature range, which is this OB, FB, KM range, one way, and the brightness range the other. As your number gets smaller, the star is brighter. So your hottest stars are brightest, and there's very few of them. As you go on down, you get more and more stars, and your temperature is getting colder, the color is getting more and more rich. I need you to remember this OBAFGKM is, all the astronomers use it, OB, here and there, all kids me. When Mr. Mother wants to know what it's free right now, there's some other classifications that we won't worry about for the special. Now, when they plotted this, they found some other things happen. They found that not only did this work for color and temperature, but they found that it worked for mass, too. Your heaviest stars were up here, and if the stars got down here, they're getting less and less, and less and less mass. And we found that this relationship works very, very neatly. This is why a star down here is a red star, because of its mass. The star here is an A star, because it has its mass. And we found also that the life cycle of the star, how long the star lasted, depended on its life. These stars over here going out within thousands of years, about 100,000 years to 800,000 years. They don't even last a million years. When you come down to A, they're lasting a little bit longer than solar. Harrison Beverly about halfway to the main entrance. The King Fed Web final ran, if you have a plan, it's in the exact right space to get very good time and develop civilization here. And so it lasts, just incredibly long compared to the G stars. In fact, some of the stars in the center of the galaxy, I think maybe the original stars, according to some of them, are even all second generation stars. These suns, by the way, born from the dust of the stars that have been stars and burned out and started again and burned out many, many times. This is the light signature of a star. Stars don't move up and down in any sequence. Originally, they thought we might have a big star, and as it burned out, it went down the main sequence. It got cooler and cooler and redder and redder. This isn't what happens. You get a large old mass and it starts contracting, and as it contracts, it gets brighter and brighter. Well, actually, it gets brighter because it's cooler, but it gets smaller and smaller and a higher, what they call a younger color. It goes up the main sequence here. And then it goes down the main sequence, and on the main sequence, this is when it's burning hydrogen on the core. And the hydrogen burning phase is the stage where it lasts the longest. It stays here, it doesn't change. And this is why this is so important, why the main sequence is important to life. Because at this stage, it's burning hydrogen, it's not changing its temperature. And it takes eons for it to be at a steady temperature for life to form. So it's a very, very slow process. Once it leaves the main sequence, once the hydrogen is burning over the core, it starts burning around the core, it starts to swell. And this happens fairly fast. It swells up into a red dark. And this time, as it's swelling, it's going to cover the planets that were near it before. So these large giants started to look at their constellations at night. It's brighter than you should see. These are not the stars that we have planets in life. These really tiny dim ones, you hardly notice are there, but they're big ones. Also, this stage is kind of variable. They're pulsating in and out. So even if you had a planet, say, way out here, suppose that they had formed down here, and there's a planet hopping out to the very edge of the solar system. Some days we would be getting a great deal of heat, some days it would be too cold, and they would not be getting even temperature, even if they could exist, they probably couldn't at this stage. Then it starts collapsing. The hydrogen is being used up, and it starts burning other things, the helium and the carbon, I think, maybe starting into the atomic reaction down here. Now, if the star is bigger than the sun, it has to lose mass, or by the time it reaches here, it will explode. Now, remember, there are not very many stars that are bigger than our sun. Most of your stars are way down here in these little red dwarfs. But if it reaches over here and it's bigger than the sun, it will go into a nova or a supernova. If it's like our sun or the smaller stars, it will just go on as being a white dwarf. And the white dwarfs are very hot on the surface, they're very tiny, and they would be very unlikely for that. So the only ones we need to worry about, the only ones we have hopes for satellites, would be these that are on the main sequence. I made a hexagonal diagram of the stars that are actually in the model. These are all the stars within 3-2 light years. The A stars, these are those bright white ones. There are no B in those stars. There's none of the great big ones. But there are some of the A. But there's only 4 A stars that are within 3-2 light years. There's 5 white dwarfs. There's 7 of the F stars, 27 Gs, which is again like our sun, 50 of K, and 138 of these tiny red dwarfs. So almost all the stars would be your red dwarfs. Now the stars that could have life are those in this little block here. Some of these Gs are too large, some of them are off the main sequence. Some of them are companions to other double stars. And double stars are not always alive. Now, these over here are the ones that could be common, and they probably don't have life of their own. And these are the ones that possibly could, if the planet is exactly the right size and exactly the right place, and it has to have both the right size and the right place. This is the picture of our position in the galaxy. Here is our galaxy team, sideways, our galaxy, the Milky Way, as we know. We are about halfway out from one of the spiral arms of the galaxy. Now, the stars are broken into two groups. The population one stars, and I don't know why I call them one, because it's very confusing, are the ones that are near us. The population two stars are actually the younger stars. I think they call those population ones. I mean, the older stars, these are the ones that some of these may be the very first stars formed, at least in this one big bang. And these stars are a little bit different in composition than these. These stars in the center of the galaxy are much purer and crazy. Now, I haven't seen this in any of the astronomy books, these stars in the center, if they have hydrogen, and if the planet storms at the same time the stars form, the stars are made with hydrogen, they could have gas planets like Jupiter and Saturn, but our terrestrial planets are basically iron, silicon, and things like that. And I don't see how they could have terrestrial planets. Most of your books will say the most advanced societies will be here, because it's a sea that lasts the longest time. But if there's no solid ground to walk on, I don't see how we have a special planet. The stars are the things that make the elements. And if they haven't had a chance to go through this process of making them, it takes this generation of stars burning out. So by the burning out, the elements are being made. And if they haven't had a chance to burn out and form these elements, the elements aren't going to be there. Out here, they burned out and formed, and burned out and formed, and burned out and formed, and you have the elements that are needed for life made. So I believe that probably you'll find most of your life out here in the planet Earth. If they just read some of the astronomy books. Now, the astronomers have to map the size about the way that we map the Earth. First, when they look at the stars, it looks like a great big bowl over them. And it looks like the stars are all pasted on the inside of that bowl. And they had a map in some way, so they took the pole of the Earth and they extended it. And the North Pole of the Earth extended out and came the North Pole of the Pole. The South Pole of the Earth became the South Pole of the Pole. They took a plane right through the equator and cut the bowl, and this became the celestial equator. Now, the horizon is 24 equal parts, and they call these hours. So instead of having longitude, they plot their stars in hours and minutes and seconds. But they have degrees, just like we do, plus degrees for those in the northern hemisphere, and minus degrees for the southern hemisphere. So if you have a star here, in their catalogs, it would be listed as 20 hours, about 20 minutes, and about 47 degrees, plus 47 degrees. So any star from Earth is just given hours and minutes and degrees, and you know exactly where to look at that star. Here's the celestial sphere, only tilted straight up now with the North Pole here and the South Pole here, Earth in the middle. Here is how it was written on the model. To get the degree, the hour of the ground that you need to place your stars, I put them down at the bottom and the top, because the plane is going to stay all the way up there for the equator. And to get your degrees up and down, I need a plastic protractor. And then, to place the star actually in space, instead of just on a sphere where they're all placed out the same distance, you need one more measurement and that from any model to make it any set where you want to. I chose a centimeter and a half so I could get the most I could as it fit between as far as I could, so any error or hanging wouldn't count for as much. And I placed a pin in here, and then this arm, we lift it up and down, so it's close to start with what we had before. About 47 degrees up, and on the 20-hour, I was playing the protractor around 20 hours, 20 minutes, lift the arm up to the right angle, and then measure out on the arm. Put a little dot on the protractor, go straight up, drill a hole, straight down, drill a hole, hang the bead, and it would be exactly the same viewing position as you can see at the moment, so the right scale out. Then I went around and just draw and start. I am not a very good seller, but I started out noticeably, and I can't remember if it dropped the E or not, but I looked up the dictionary. And then I went ahead and did some other photographs and some other charts. And actually, the best photograph is, and didn't even bother to put it in. Didn't even notice it until I got it on the screen. But of the 188 systems of industry, you might be better sources than your models. I told you some of the comments. But of those actual systems that you might use, there's only 14 that are greater than those comments. And there are 50 that would be visible if they were all cleaned out. We call that absolute magnitude, is a comparison of all the stars if you line them all out, same distance away. You look at them all and you see which one is brighter than the other. Well, at absolute magnitude, there's only 50 that could be seen at all. And all these mirror stars, now you take the mirror stars, you can see because they're mirrors. But you can't. There's at least 138 which you can't see, and there can't be any more that are out there. Actually, I should have this up to because they found two things on each chart. So it's 140 right now. They also think there may be about 200 stars out there that they haven't found. Some of the things I found in the model, I'm beginning to doubt that. I think maybe that's only too high. Now, this is systems. This means that some of these are double stars, some are triple, some are quadruple stars. If you took them by components, and I put this plus here because some of the double stars, I don't know anything about the components, they're spectroscopic binary. This means they're so close together you get one light from them. You know they're doubles, but you don't know what kind. You only know that, say, it looks like a G star. It could be two G's together or something like this. But these spectroscopic binaries, I call them as a single, and they shouldn't be. They should be broken up into parts. But again, I don't know how many parts there are. And also, there's some black companions, or dark companions. I shouldn't say black, because then they start glowing, and they can't see. But anyway, there's 237 components there. Of these, only 15 are greater than this one, and only 55 would be visible at 10 light years away. And 182 of these plus are telescopic. Visual magnitude, this means what you actually can see from Earth. There's nothing brighter than our sun to us. There's only 63 that can be seen, and 125 plus that can't be. This surprised me. I hadn't expected anything like this. I thought most of the close stars would be visible. This is probably, to me, about the most important thing I found. I found the stars seem to form in groups of general white kinds. Like you have G stars seem to form in just two areas. The large A stars in area F form the plane coming down this way. The small K star, the small one, forms in a little cluster here. But behind them were a whole group of the small N stars. And you have clusters of the N stars that are scattered in through here. Nothing in this drawing says anything about them, and I think it may be because you know, it's never been done like this before, and you may not realize it. You can't spot this from looking through the catalog. You can only see it in 3D through a model. So I'll find out more about that, but she got some potential trauma. This is a view from the model that shows, I tried to show the group in there. Here you have the one area over here is the area where almost all the plants that have life power, And this area, from here on in, has practically nothing. Tiny hands, white doors. There's a little cluster up here that could. This one is put down here, but this one is beyond the tree, so I can put a lot of these extra ones I stuck in the model. At this point, I'm going to A, B, C, I had some